Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premiere Network Saturday, August 25th, 2018. This is episode 1517. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Qualcomm Snapdragon. According to Ookla, Android smartphones with Snapdragon 845 from Qualcomm had faster data speeds on AT&T and T-Mobile than non-Android phones with Intel modems, based on over a million real-world tests done in Q2 2018. See all the data for yourself at qualcomm.com/twit. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater. You know how we do it. Digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, technology and all its wonderful array. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number if you want to talk about tech. If you want answers to your questions, if you don't have any questions, you just want to say something, that's okay too. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. That's the phone number, 8888-ASK. Leo, outside that area, you know, the rest of the world, all the other 188, whatever it is, countries, you could just use Skype out and call because it's a toll free number. 8888-ASK. Leo. Little net neutrality battle going on right now. The folks at Verizon severely throttled the Santa Clara County Central Fire Protection District broadband service. The folks in Santa Clara County, as happens in California, had gone up to Mendocino, 100-some miles north, to help fight that massive fire that's still going on. They used the Verizon broadband service to provide crisis response emergency services. But there was a little little hitch in the get-along, and Verizon had slowed them down to dial-up speeds. The fire department battled. Since December 2017 and then in a series of increasingly desperate emails this June and July, the FPD battled with Verizon, begging them to cease the throttling and warning the company of potential harm to public safety during major emergencies and disasters. Verizon said, well, we could do that, but you will have to pay double, more than double. And then they ended it. Verizon says this was merely a customer service mistake, and the situation has nothing to do with net neutrality or the current proceeding in court. Well, yeah, except if the phone companies were, the broadband companies were still regulated like phone companies, the FCC would have stepped in and said, "Yeah, knock it off." But now they're not, thanks to the FCC's change in the rules. In fact, it's the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, that now is in charge of enforcing this. They don't have really an enforcement arm, so maybe we'll see you in court in a couple of years. Meanwhile, the fire burns. Speaking of fires, T-Mobile now says 2 million customers, well, 3% of their 77 million customers, so I guess that's 2.5 million customers, information has been leaked to hackers, billing zip codes, phone numbers, email addresses, and account numbers. No financial data, no social security numbers, no passwords. So nothing to worry about here. And then researchers, I guess, have discovered another bug. If you buy something in the Apple store, you can then guess people's T-Mobile PIN. I don't know. With the account number and the PIN, it seems like there's a lot of damage could be done there. Might be worth changing your T-Mobile PIN and password. Let's see. Here's an interesting story that comes actually from last spring, but we're only learning about it now because of a gag order. Earlier this year, a federal judge signed a search warrant for authorities in Maine. They were trying to figure out, there were nine robberies, and they're trying to figure out who did it. They thought, you know, we could go to Google and just see where everybody, who everybody was in the, that was in the vicinity of this, these robbers, who they are. Just like everybody who was around that area. Let's just get their information. What about that? Maybe that'll help us narrow it down. And a judge signed off on this. Even though they didn't know if the suspect was even carrying a Google device. The warrant ordered Google to turn over all data, whether a user was carrying an Android or iPhone, or, you know, because if you're running a Google app, Google knows where you are. They wanted everything, too. They wanted names, addresses, phone numbers of everybody in that area. That's what they call that, a phishing expedition. We don't have any clues. So let's just look at everybody who was in that area. Google declined. This is back in April. They were ordered again. They declined again. Eventually, amazingly enough, the police did actually arrest a guy, figured it out that he, even without the Google information. There's a struggle going on between corporations, especially corporations that know an awful lot about us these days, and law enforcement who think this is a treasure trove. This is a treasure trove of information. If we could only just see where everybody is at all times, my goodness, crime would be at an end. It's true. It's true. All right, I have to give you some good news. How about this? Microsoft bought Minecraft. You know Minecraft, right? If you know a kid under 15, you know Minecraft because it's all the rage. I guess it's even still today. Kids love Minecraft. They just love playing it. It's like it's Legos for the 21st century, even though it's all online, you know, on a computer game. You're building bricks, blocks, and you can build stuff. You can fight ghoulies and goblins and stuff. There's you know, they call them mobs. There's stuff you can do, but also you can dig, you can mine, you can fish, you can build a house. It's a construction kit. It's really cool. Microsoft did some really good things. Sometimes you worry when a big company buys a little company and a game that is much beloved that they might not cherish the game in the same way its users do. But Microsoft seems to have done a great job with Minecraft. In fact, they created an education edition of Minecraft, which is brilliant because if you want to catch the imaginations of middle schoolers, no better way than to put a pickaxe in their hand and say, let's dig. The education edition is teaching kids to program. It's teaching them chemistry. It's teaching them a lot of stuff. In fact, there's a chemistry resource pack that you can turn on now if you have what they call the Bedrock edition, the pocket edition of Minecraft on the Xbox or on Windows. You could turn it on and do chemistry, real chemistry. You get the periodic table of elements. You combine elements. Things happen. What a cool idea. They've also put education edition on the iPad now. So this is, I think, a great way to learn about STEM, science, technology, and math. And the Compound Creator is so cool. Now, I'll put a link in the show notes to the because it's not easy, you know, it's a little complicated turning it on. You have to be using Windows 10, PC or Xbox console. In the game, you have to go to Create New World. Yeah, you have to create the world from scratch to do this. And then look for cheats. Under the cheats menu, you toggle on education. That's a good cheat. They're even smart enough to say, I know, let's put education under cheats. Then it'll look cool. And you can make helium, and you can craft balloons. You can make latex. Yeah, if you do helium, and then you make a latex, and then you make a balloon, and then they put the helium in the balloon, you can float. It's so cool. So cool. Good on you, Microsoft. That's awesome. Better chemistry through Minecraft. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. I'd love to hear from you if you want to talk high tech. That's what we do here. The world is a-changing, and what does it all mean? That is the subject of the show. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. Let's get some calls on the line. Oh, we already do. Kim Sheffer's already here working hard. And we will take your calls next. Oh, yeah. Speaking of strange, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, here's Kim Sheffer.
I'm not sure where you're going with that, but I'll take it.
Speaking of odd, hello, Kim.
I am indeed odd. My chair is higher now, so now my
You're up in the air. You're up in the air. What are you doing all the way up there?
The ball got pumped up.
Oh. John, have you pumped up my ball yet?
Yours is good.
He says mine's good, but yours was sagging.
Oh, I thought mine was pretty pumped up last week.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I could use a little air in mine. I like it. I like it when it's really people. We probably are wondering what the
what are you talking about?
We sit on
bouncy balls.
Bouncy balls. That's good for your posture or something.
Yeah. Well, I could use all the help I could get. I'm kind of a sloucher.
I just do it because it's more active than just. Yeah, I'm a sloucher too, and I don't. Yeah. It's hard enough to keep my energy up. But,
I don't think I've ever sat in a real chair during doing this show in all the years. I don't think they're...
Really?
Yeah, I think it's always been a ball.
Really?
Yeah.
And was that your choice, or did they subject you to that?
No, because Heather was here, and
she liked the ball.
Okay, good. I adapted to the ball.
Very nice. Yeah. Do you sit on one at home?
No, I don't have...
Yeah.
I lay in bed at home.
Yeah, that's what I do, too. That's probably why you and I both...
Slouch.
You
have the laptop lean.
This is not the posture show, however. Although,
Dr. Dina Dell.
There's something about techies, probably because they spend a lot of time sitting at a desk looking at a computer, that they're fascinated by ways to sit. And for a while, I don't know if you remember these weird crouching desks where you'd have your legs, you'd be kneeling, and they were not comfortable.
Well, there's the stand-up desks,
and then now there's stand-up, and then treadmill. That's so, right. John has a treadmill desk.
Oh, does he really?
I believe so.
I've
lost quite a bit of weight because of that. Yeah, yeah. So there's something about we geeks. We like to, I know what it is. We're never content with the way things are. We always want to hack it, change
right.
it, modify it. That's a good thing. I think that's one of the things that's made Silicon Valley what it is today. Never satisfied with the status quo.
Well, all during last week, getting ready for another show, there was a guy in here with a headset.
Yeah.
And he was just like telling the mouse to do things instead of actually having it was for your screensaver.
Yeah. He was, he the one, I can't remember if that was the security robot.
No, not the robot. The other thing that was on.
We had a security robot patrolling the parking lot before the show last week.
That was funny. You had people pulling into the parking lot to take pictures with it.
Selfies with the robot.
It was pretty funny. But no, this guy was talking to this headset the whole time, and just meaning like now he doesn't have a mouse or a keyboard.
Nope.
He was just talking to it.
Get ready for the new world.
What to do. So, yes, techies like all their new gadgets.
I've gotten used to the idea. At first, it really puzzled me and bothered me that people would walk down the street like madmen, talking briskly and vigorously to nothing, to the air.
Oh, with their pods
with their
in?
Bluetooth headphones.
Yes.
And now it's just commonplace. Yeah, oh, yeah, he's on the phone.
Yeah. When I'd look in a car and see somebody talking to themselves, I thought they were crazy.
Yeah,
and
not
now
anymore.
Now it's just normal.
Nope.
They're on the phone.
Crazy's the new normal.
Crazy.
We're talking to ghosts in our ear. Who should I, speaking of talking to, who should I start the show with?
There's too much information here. I can't see it. George in Venice, Florida.
Another thing I say all the time. There's too much
there's
information.
Too much information. George in Venice, Florida. Let's go.
All right. Thank you, Kim. Hi, George. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. Longtime listener and a three-time caller.
Well, that's not... I should give you a sticker. That's a little red gold star to put on your forehead.
Not a ball, but I've got a question. I'm pretty sure you've got the answer to. Can't hear you on my phone, Leo.
You can't hear me?
No, hang on a second. Let me.
Hello, hello. Can you hear me now?
Hey, can you hear me on my phone?
I hear you. I hear you, George. Can you hear me now, George?
Okay, I can hear you now.
Okay,
thank you. Simple question. My iPhone gets overloaded all the memory's gone, and so I have to delete some photos or apps.
Yes, right? Yes.
So I go to my photos, and I go to delete one, and it, what it says is it's going to delete...
Everywhere.
Everywhere.
So don't do that.
I don't want to do
that. Don't do that. So there's a few choices you have. This is the most common problem on iPhones. On any phone, the things that fill it up, even if you got a 32-gig iPhone, you probably had plenty of room until you started taking lots of pictures. And nobody ever takes the pictures off. So there's two ways to do this. There's the Apple way and the Google way. And you get to pick. I prefer the Google way. But let me tell you the Apple way. The Apple way might cost you a little bit of money. Apple has a thing called iCloud. And that's where the photos can be stored in full quality if you turn on the iCloud photo library. It'll store them up there, and it'll store them as originals. And then what you can do this, by the way, in the settings. If you go to Photos, you then, underneath iCloud Photos, there's another setting that says Optimize Photo Storage. If you select that, what it does is it deletes the full quality images that are on your phone, because they're already in the cloud. They're safe, and keeps basically thumbnails, phone-sized, much smaller versions of those photos. So that will, by doing that, that will save space, but it may fill up your iCloud photo storage. The cloud is, of course, the internet. And if it does that, then you have to pay for more. And Apple, it's not expensive, but Apple does charge you. I think I pay $1.99 a month for 200 gigabytes, something like that. So that's one issue, one way to do it. The other way to do it is use a program called Google Photos, which is free from Google. In Google's photo app, you can have it back up all the photos. The only drawback to this, unlike Apple's photo app, the Google photo app has to be open for it to back up. So you need to periodically just open the Google Photos app and back up all your photos. Make sure that they're all backed up. And there's a little icon that you'll see when they're not backed up and all that. So that's the Apple Photos. Let me go to the Google Photos. I'm looking at my photos right now. So when it's all backed up, there'll be a little check mark next to the cloud. Then you can go into Settings under Google Photos and say Free Up Space. Now, this is backing up your photos, not the originals, but very close to original quality, to Google's cloud, which gives you free unlimited storage. So all of your photos will be backed up there. And then there's a button in there that says Free Up Space, and it will find all the photos that are currently backed up, and you can delete those. And that generally will save you gigabytes of space. This costs you nothing. Google's photo sharing app means that all those photos are still visible. If you want to look at a photo, you just go through the photo sharing app, and you can click on the one you want to see, and you can see it full size. So it still exists on the Google Cloud, but it saves the images on your phone. There's a third way that you could do this if you didn't want to share photos to the cloud, which is to periodically connect it to a computer, copy the photos off, and then delete them. And when it says, delete it everywhere, it won't delete backed up photos that are backed up in iTunes or on a PC backed up into some sort of photo service. So those are actually three ways to do it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson coming up in a moment. But before we go to Scotty, I want to thank our sponsor on the show today, Qualcomm. Test your phone, not your patience. Qualcomm and the Snapdragon processor. I have a Snapdragon right here. Do you want faster speeds in your phone? Easy question, easy answer, right? Who doesn't want more speed? Data speeds. Waiting's annoying, by the way. Waiting in line is annoying. Waiting in traffic's annoying. Waiting for those photos to download, that's annoying. But how can you get faster data speed even without switching carriers? Well, you just need the right phone with a Qualcomm Snapdragon in it, the Snapdragon 845. So Ookla, which does, the speed test site, they have over 1 million real-world results from the speed test app, AT&T and T-Mobile, and these were all from Q2, April, May, June, right, Q2. In those millions of downloads, those millions of speed tests on AT&T and T-Mobile, Android phones with Snapdragon 845 from Qualcomm Technologies had up to 192% faster data speeds than non-Android phones with Intel modems. That's almost twice as fast. I can verify this because I have a non-Android phone with an Intel modem, and it is, the data speed is not as fast. 192%. Plus, the Snapdragon 845 mobile platform is engineered with powerful features to allow you to do even more with your phone. Immersive XR experiences, VR and augmented reality, what they call it, XR. The third generation Qualcomm Hexagon 685 DSP supports sophisticated on-device AI processing. That means your camera can work better, give you better pictures. Your voice recording and voice recognition can work better. And gaming experiences, virtual reality, augmented reality, they all work better thanks to the Hexagon 685. Plus, I really love this, Qualcomm has built in a secure processing unit. It's designed to help protect personal data. For instance, if you use biometrics, fingerprint or eye scanner, face recognition, it'll be stored in isolation, keeping it away from the bad guys. Energy efficient, engineered for all-day battery life. And, of course, thanks to Qualcomm and their fast charging, you can charge up to 50% in only 15 minutes. I think all in all, it's a win-win-win. Check out all the data for yourself at qualcomm.com/twit. qualcomm.com/twit. And then upgrade your data speeds with a phone powered by Snapdragon 845. qualcomm.com/twit. And I thank Qualcomm and the 845 for all that speed and supporting the Tech Guy podcast. So I've analyzed the lyrics of this Red Hot Chili Peppers song.
Yes.
It goes hump de bump doop bodu, hump de bump doop bop. Oh no. 40 detectives this week, 40 detectives strong, taking a stroll down Love Street. Strolling, is that so wrong? Can I get my codependent? Hump.
What?
De bump. Doop.
Yep.
Badoo.
Yeah. What the hell does that mean?
Maybe the next verse will help. It must have been 100 miles or any of 100 styles. It's not about the smile you wear, but the way we make out. When I was an all-aloner, nothing but a two-beach comber. Anybody seen the sky? I'm wide awake now. Well, now it's perfectly clear.
Now it makes perfect sense.
One reason we like to talk to Scott is because he does make things perfectly clear on our screens, on our TVs. Mm. He's our home theater guru. That means audio and video. And his publication is the AVS Forum at avsforum.com. Really an excellent place to learn all. I've been on an AVS Forum since I wrote my TiVo book, which is almost 20 years ago now.
Yeah, so it started in 1999.
Wow. That's awesome. So it is. It's almost 20 years.
Yeah.
So what do you have for us today?
Oh, I got a couple of good things. Wayne Boyer is asking the perennial question, which TV should I get? He's got a 2008 Samsung, and he'd like to upgrade to 4K, which nowadays, if you buy a TV, you can't. It's hard not to get 4K. And he heard me mention the Vizio P series on this show, which I've talked about a number of times and really like, and also Sony TVs. And he mentions that the Vizio, the P series 65 inch at Costco is about $2,000. And so is the Sony X900F, whereas the Sony X850F is about $500 cheaper. My answer to that is don't get the 850. It's not that it's a bad TV. It's not. But it uses a type of backlight technology called edge lighting. So the LEDs, all LCD TVs have a backlight, some sort of light source that pushes light through the LCD panel that forms the picture. And the 850 and many LCD TVs have those LEDs along the edge of the screen. And that causes problems with uniformity. So if you're looking at the black of space, for example, an outer space scene, you might see sort of little flashlighting or little unevenness in the black of space. Whereas the Vizio P series and the Sony X900 use what's called direct backlighting with full array local dimming. So there's a two-dimensional array of LEDs behind the LCD panel, and they shine light directly through. They don't need a light guide plate that takes the light coming in from the side and angles it out. It's a much more uniform look to it, and it's better contrast because those LEDs behind the LCD panel can be brightened and dimmed in small zones. And so if you have a bright thing over here and a dark thing over here, the bright thing will be bright and the dark thing will be dark because the LEDs have been adjusted to accentuate that. So I definitely recommend getting either the P-Series or the X900. Now, I will tell you this. Here's some news that we put on the AVS forum last week. Vizio's new flagship called the P-Series Quantum. It's basically a P-Series, and the backlight adds a dimension called quantum dots, which we've talked about on this show. They're nanoparticles, typically a few nanometers in diameter, and the LEDs behind the screen are blue, and the blue light hits these nanoparticles, and they glow green and red, depending on their size. And so the green and red plus the blue from the LEDs creates white light, and that's what illuminates the screen. It can be brighter, and the Peak Series Quantum is quite a bit brighter than the P Series, maybe twice as bright. And so it does HDR very, very well. The reason I bring it up is that starting last Wednesday, I believe, and extending through September, the P Series Quantum is on pretty serious sale at Costco, Best Buy, and Sam's Club. Now, it's normally $2,100 for even the P-Series Quantum, which is quite a bit better than the regular P-Series. But for this month at Costco, it's $1,500.
Oh, for how big?
65.
That's amazing.
65-inch. That's the only size the P-Series Quantum comes in, 65-inch.
Oh, okay.
But $1,500? And this thing is supposed to have a peak light output of 2,000 lumens, which is a lot, believe me. Now, when it's calibrated, it probably won't be quite that bright, but it'll still be one of the brightest TVs on the market, period.
And
no
it's 4K,
question.
It's HDR,
4K,
it's got all the things you
want. HDR,
nice.
Everything you want.
All right.
Smart TV, you know, if you want the apps in the TV, it's got that. $1,500, for goodness sakes, that's amazing.
Is the P-Series for Vizio, that's their top of the line, or is there a...
It is. The P-Series Quantum now is their top of the line.
Okay.
The regular, quote-unquote, regular P-Series is one small step down from that.
I'm glad to see Vizio still setting a very aggressive price point. These are good TVs.
Yeah.
Boy, that's a great price.
Yeah.
Wow.
So for till the end of the month, that's what I would recommend to Wayne Boyer.
That's your Super Bowl TV. Get that.
That's now. Man, oh man.
Or NFL TV anyway.
Yeah. Exactly.
There might be something better out by February, but for now, that's pretty good.
That's really good.
Yeah.
So that's what I recommend. Certainly you want to look for a TV that has what's called a FALD, F-A-L-D, full array local dimming backlight.
Okay.
That's for LCD TVs, that's what you want, not edge lit. And sometimes it's a little hard to tell, so I try to make that as clear as I can anytime I write about it.
I do want to remind people, though, when you get an HDR 4K TV, you got to upgrade all your sources.
Well, there's that.
If you want to see it in 4K, you got to get a 4K mm-hmm. UHD Blu-ray with HDR.
Well, you don't have to, but
no, you do. You must. No, you don't have to. But what's the point, I guess, if you don't?
Well,
right?
You've got the apps in the TV that'll do 4K.
They'll
HDR.
Do 4K. So it comes with Netflix and all that stuff.
YouTube, Hulu, all that stuff, all right. Vudu. But yeah, if you want the absolute best quality, you want a UHD Blu-ray player.
I feel like streaming 4K HDR is not as good as disc based.
It isn't. That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct. It's noisier.
It's also annoying because there aren't that many discs 4K HDR.
Well,
they're expensive.
They're getting up there.
You have to have dedicated hardware. You know, that's a little annoying.
Well, maybe, but in the end, when you get a tremendous experience.
It really
and you
does
know this
good.
Very well.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because you have an OLED, an LG OLED, which is a different technology than the one we've been talking about here, but It still gives you a tremendous video watching experience, movie watching experience.
And I admit, when I watch even Netflix on that, it does look better. I don't think there's as much dynamic range as there would be on a disc, but
well, because you're limited with
you're
the
compressing
with
the, it.
You're compressing it, and you're limited with the amount of bandwidth that's coming into your house.
Right.
I mean, you're probably not too limited. You got probably a lot of bandwidth coming into your house.
I have
but
enough
a lot of people are.
To get the highest quality Netflix is sending.
Yeah.
But it's still compressed.
It's not as good as Blu-ray.
Yeah. Yeah. Scott Wilkinson is at the AVS Forum. You can read his stuff there, including the price news. In fact, there's a whole discussion in the forum about this new Quantum 65-inch Vizio. If you want to read about it, avsforum.com. Scott joins us every week. Is there a way people can email you, Scott, if they have a question?
Oh, sure. You can just email askscottwilkinson@gmail.com or asktheeditors@avsforum.com. Either way, it'll get to me.
Thanks, Scott. We'll talk again next week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And we're all caught up on our pre-records, aren't we?
We are.
Yeah. I'm getting to the end. This is my last Saturday show for a month.
Yeah. Amazing, huh?
Yeah. So you'll have a couple with Rich DeMuro.
Right. I've got a couple. The next two are pre-recorded, so
yes.
I'm off for those.
You got 2 weeks off, yes.
Yeah, the second of those 2 weeks I'll be in San Diego at Cedia, so it's good that – I mean, I would call in on my cell, but, you know.
It would be nice, and I'm sorry that – yeah, but –
it, you know, just didn't work. And then the following week I'll probably talk with Rich about Cedia.
Right.
Because there are a number of things there that are looking pretty interesting.
Good. Good. That's exciting.
Yeah.
That'll be fun. Including this dual laser Hisense.
Yes. Hisense is going to be there with their dual laser. That's correct.
Yeah. That's why
What I'm coming up for on the 6th is to look at the one that's currently in your studio,
They say they're putting the dual in for that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's the whole point of it.
Oh,
unless
well,
I'm
good.
Misunderstanding.
Well, I'm not 100% sure then either. I thought I was going to look at the one you've currently got.
It was my understanding that they were going to put the dual in and bring you up because they wanted you to look at it.
Okay, well, great.
But you may know more than I do. I'll check with Anthony and make sure that that I'm understanding that properly.
Sure.
Because there's no point, to be honest, we've already sat down with Robert Herron and looked at the single laser.
Right.
There's
right.
no point in us redoing that. You might want to do it. But in that case, we wouldn't put you on the screensavers and do a whole show around it because we've already looked at it.
Right, right,
so
right. Exactly.
I will check with Anthony
check,
to make sure that's
double
the case.
Check with that. But I'm pretty sure if that's the case, that's fine with me. Totally, in fact. Oh, I would love to.
Anthony says, myth confirmed. Leo's right. We will have the new one for you.
Oh, excellent. Well, that's great.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Nice.
Okay, well, I will probably want to do a calibration then. And I'm going to come up and work Friday evening in the studio when I can turn the lights out in the studio.
Sure.
That's one thing I need to be able to do for part of the time I'm there is to turn the lights out. And obviously,
and
I can't do that during the day while you're working.
Yeah, you couldn't do it during the radio show because Kim's in there.
Kim and the engineers are in there.
Yeah. Well, the engineers aren't doing anything important, but Kim is. No, honestly, they're not. But, I mean, they don't have anything to do in there. But
Kim does.
Alex says, I beg to differ. I got two engineers looking, give me this evil
giving
eye.
You the evil eye, yeah. Right?
Yeah. They're preparing for the new screensavers.
That's right. That's right. Which I'm happy to co-host.
Yeah, that'll be
I
fun.
Guess Good. With you, huh?
Yeah.
I get to see you.
Yeah, I'll be back.
In person?
Yeah, I'll be back. And then that's what we're doing.
When I'm up there, you're gone.
No, that's
fantastic.
What we're doing then. And that gives Hisense time to put that new one in, too.
Yeah.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Skyler on the line, Cooper City, Florida. Hi, Skyler.
Hi there. How you doing today, Leo?
I am great. Thanks for hanging on.
Great. This is an honor speaking to you. You've been my mentor for many, many years, and I appreciate all you do for us.
Well, thank you. It's my honor to talk to you. What can I do for you?
Well, first of all, a while back, I remember you talking about how you're really impressed with how China's really stepped up their game with mass production and really brought to light by Apple. And, you know, they can make quality products and also mass produce them. And it reminded me of a conversation I had with my daughter when she's about 5 years old. Many years ago at breakfast, she finished her cereal and blurted out, wow, people in China are really busy. And I said, Janelle, what do you mean, Janelle? She flipped her cereal bowl over and says, they make everything. So it was kind of.
Yeah, they make everything.
You make everything, for sure.
That's from the words of wisdom from the young.
That's for sure. But anyway, here's my dilemma. I purchased a Dell laptop, and after about 6 months ago, I was saving a very large, like 20 gigabyte file overnight. And when I woke up in the morning, couldn't find the hard drive.
Oy.
It was looping.
Yeah.
So I found out that is an SD hybrid drive that you mentioned some time ago.
Yeah.
So I found out, I went and bought SpinRite, and I can't seem to find the drive. It just can't see the terabyte
okay.
drive.
So the way these drives work, and they were, Apple did a version of it they called the Fusion drive, and the one you have sounds like it's the Intel version of this, which combines combines a very small amount of solid state storage, usually like 32 gigs or less. It's very small. And then a large spinning drive. And the theory was, and this really comes from the days when solid state disks were really too expensive for anybody to get. They've come down so much in price now, and I've been told will continue to fall over the next year. That they're almost, and probably by next year, will be at the same price point as spinning drives. There'll be no price premium to get solid state, at which point everybody should just get solid state. So you have an older technology that really was designed to save money, and unfortunately it has some drawbacks. First of all, it's not as fast as a solid state drive. It's really not even much faster than a spinning drive, because the idea is the operating system will look at stuff you access more often and put it on the solid state drive, because that's where it can load it faster. But it's such a small solid state drive, it's not, most stuff is still on the spinning drive. Unknown what's wrong with yours, because you have this is the other problem with it, this kind of beast with two backs. You have a complicated system, and it could be the solid state drive died, it could be the spinning drive has disk errors. You know, the fact that you were copying a large file could have stressed it, but it also could have discovered an area of the drive that's been bad all along, you just never wrote to it. The fact that you can't see it in SpinRite worries me a little bit, but I would prefer – SpinRite might not be the best diagnostic for this. SpinRite is a hard drive maintenance utility made by my friend Steve Gibson. When you boot up the system, does – you know how and a lot of times now on systems they hide this, but when you first boot up, it shows you the hardware. The BIOS shows you the hardware. If you can't see it, hit escape. If it's showing the – fancy ad for your computer manufacturer, hit escape to see if you can get behind it. If you can't, then you want to go into the setup utility, because what you want to do is see if the operating, the BIOS, the basic operating system, the UEFI, sees a drive there, because that'll tell you something. If it doesn't see a drive there, then that means either the computer itself, that SATA bus, where, you know, the way it's connected is damaged, maybe the cable fell off. You know, I mean, it could be something that trivial and easy to fix. It could be that the circuit board on the drive has failed. That all of those things would mean the drive doesn't show up at all. Like, I don't, there's no drive there. There's just an empty space there. So that's the first thing to do, is to go into setup and see if you can see it. If you can see it, well, it's presenting itself as a drive. That's actually worse news in some ways, because now it means, you know, it's maybe a failure internally in the drive, a difficult thing to recover. You have a backup?
It's not as fresh as I wish it would be.
Yeah.
One thing I would mention is I connected this to another computer as its primary drive, and I booted up using Hyrens Boot CD.
Good choice.
And oddly enough, one of the recovery drive utilities did see it as a Toshiba drive.
Perfect.
But on the original drive, it can't see it. My drive was kind of running short on space when I was saving this huge file, not like completely empty. And I'm getting like a partition table error when I boot up on it.
Okay. So maybe it's the second case. The drive is visible. The hardware is okay. The controller's working. But unfortunately, the drive data itself is damaged. SpinRite, did you try SpinRiting it on that second computer?
Yeah, I did it in the original laptop, couldn't see it. I took it out, put it on a USB enclosure with another computer, didn't see it. Then I added it to as the primary drive on that second computer.
And booted to Hyrens.
So the mass,
Yeah.
When I did that, I could see in irons then, yes. But I ran the utilities ahead on the drive. It couldn't recover that. It ran for days. Nothing was recovered.
Yeah, spin rights are not going to do any better than that. It's dead, Jim. I don't know. So we still don't know exactly how it's dead. So now is the little spiel I've done before on all the ways a hard drive can fail on you. One can be just, you know, a soft failure, like in the writing of it, the partition table. That's the best kind for you because it means the data is still there. It's just the operating system is having trouble seeing it. Doesn't sound like what you have because the rescue routines on Hirons are low level. They don't care about the operating system. If they're not able to read it, then that means that you may have the worst case, which is a hardware failure on the drive, bad sectors, a bent arm. It doesn't see anything. It can't read it at all.
No, not at all. It just keeps searching. Yeah.
So it depends now how important it depends how important that data that you have lost is. This is why a good backup is the most economical thing you can do, because to repair this, now you're going to be calling one of these hardware recovery companies, and they're thousands of dollars.
Yeah, I call them Drive Savers, and it's a lot of cheese.
A lot of cheese, baby.
Yeah.
That's who I would recommend. Yeah. They're good. They're just down the road a piece. I know them pretty well. And the reason they're so expensive is they actually disassemble it, figure out what parts are broken. They have identical parts. Mm-hmm. You know, they have that Toshiba drive and all the parts for it, and they can replace the part and maybe get it back. And even then, there's still no guarantee, right?
Right.
So is there something you just can't live without?
Yeah, well, there's some videos. My daughter's, it was like a Kinsey when you're there's some videos, not all of them, but some that I took with my phone, which were kind of cool. But, you know, it's not the end of the world. I'd like to get them back. But
I know you would, but I think at this point it's such an expensive thing. You've done all the right things, but it doesn't sound like it's recoverable. I'm so sorry. I really sorry, Skylar, because you want to save that Kinsey. That's a moment in time. I hope relatives have some videos.
Yeah, we had the professional get the recording too.
Oh, good. But,
is there any utility on Hirons that you could recommend over another?
I just try them all. But really, honestly, at this point, I think you've done all you can. It's time to dig a little hole in the backyard, put that drive in there, and make a little marker, say a little prayer over it. It's gone. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And now I give you Scutus Wilkinsonus. I'm going to call you that from now on.
Scutus.
Scutus Wilkinsonus. All right, let me get your clock here.
My Latin name.
Yes. It's he's of the genus Wilkinsonus.
That's right.
Okay, let's see. 9, and then I switch. Go ahead, and you're on.
Hey, everybody. MD, good to see you. M. Heiss is here. Mike Heiss, my buddy, who I will see in San Diego in a week and a half.
I love that the Mike's a regular when you're on. That's great.
I know. Very I helpful. Do, too.
Yeah.
He's a great guy. Really knows his stuff. He's a jolly good CDF fellow, in fact. Johnny Deco here just posted the question. My TV is in the middle of the room, not against a wall. I want to use a bias light, but don't want to light up the entire other side of the room. I don't see how you can avoid it. That is a problem with bias lights, and I've experienced it myself. My TV isn't exactly right up against a wall either. It's in front of another bunch of TVs, but that's because I review TVs. So it lights up the stuff behind it, and that can be a little distracting. I agree. I don't know of any bias lights that just shoot up and are beam limited somehow. It's a good question. I think using it even with it illuminating the back of the room is probably a better idea than not using it at all, at least at night. during the day, obviously you've got some light in there, probably, unless you have a totally light controlled room, in which case you probably have a projector. So without total light control during the day, you've got some light in there, and that's fine. At night, you know, I don't know. That's a tough question. That's actually a really tough question. I would probably put it in there. That would be my guess. Anyway, let's see what somebody else has to. Yeah, Mike. Foodie, you are incorrect. You say P-Series Vizio TV is Dolby Vision only, no HDR10. That is incorrect. The Vizio P-Series and PQ-Series do Dolby Vision and HDR10. And HLG, which is the high dynamic range mostly for live broadcast. It was used by the BBC for the World Cup, and also for the World Cup, it was either Dish or DirecTV. I can't remember which one. It was one of them. DirecTV, I'm thinking. But in any event, it's incorrect that the P-Series does not do HDR10. It does. So that is the answer to that question. Sorry, Johnny, that I couldn't get any better answer to you on bias light. I have to think about that. And I have to talk to, you know what I would do? In fact, what I will do, and you should too, is contact CinemaQuest at CinemaQuestInc.com. They make the Ideal Loom bias light. And the head guy there, Alan Brown, is a video viewing environment expert. He was on my podcast, and we talked about, you know, the video viewing environment. So actually, I would go to him, and I suggest you do too directly if you want. If you don't, I'll go anyway because it's a really good question. I'll post it on the website. But I think that's an excellent idea, now that I think about it, to go ask Alan about what if you've got the TV in the middle of the room. So let's see. Yes, Emily the Strange. I'll be at Twit on Friday, October 5th, and I'll be working in the evening there on the new TV, and also on the 6th, I'll do my regular segment on the Tech Guy from the studio, which is very nice. And then I'll be co-hosting Screensavers talking about the new dual laser ultra short throw projector. Yes, Sybil with the Federation hand signs. Exactly. As I said, Sybil, in my comment to you in the chat room, I just saw for the first time the new version or reboot of In Search Of. And what's so cool about it is that Zachary Quinto is the host. And if you'll remember, the original In Search Of, back in the 70s, was it, or early 80s, it was Leonard Nimoy was the host. So the two people who played Spock have now both hosted the show In Search Of, which I'm not that interested in. It's, you know, it's mostly a lot of these shows are, you know, this might mean aliens and this might mean extraterrestrials. And it's all speculation, and there's no way to say anything definitively. Swamp Rat, good to see Vizio putting tuners back in. Yeah, they did that, I think, starting last year. They had them out only for a year, I think. So let's see. Yes, so that's it. Lumpy is, how soon for 4K and HDR over the air? That's going to take a while. I don't see that happening anytime soon. It's it depends on this specification called ATSC 3.0, which is now finally finished, I believe, but it needs to be implemented now. And how many broadcasters are going to actually implement it? It can use some of the existing infrastructure, but it needs some new infrastructure as well. And so I think that's going to take a while. For broadcasters to start implementing that. Jim Four, sadly, I'm not still doing the Home Theater Geeks podcast. I am working on a couple of new things that will appear on YouTube fairly soon, so watch for that. Big sports fan. Do I like to watch sports on TV? The answer is no. I am not at all a sports person. The only sports I watch on TV is baseball, and really only plays of the week. Actually, last night, my wife and I were at Dodger Stadium. We watched the Dodgers trounce the Padres. But apparently the Padres are a very poor team this year. I don't even follow that kind of stuff. I know the Dodgers had a really strong winning streak there for a while, and then they kind of slumped for a while. I root for the Dodgers only because I live in L.A.
I forgot to ask you, how was the concert?
The concert.
Your anniversary concert.
Oh, that was great. Yeah, we went to the Hollywood Bowl.
Yeah.
Rodrigo y Gabriela and the L.A. Phil with Gustavo Dudamel. Excellent. Excellent.
Nice.
They were too loud. The sound
system. They were too loud? They amplified them? I guess they have to, huh?
Well, yeah, it's like 18,000 people at the Hollywood Bowl. But the acoustic guitars, but they amplified them, and it was pretty loud.
Yeah. All right, my friend.
Sadly. All right.
Thank you so much.
Have a great vacation.
It will be a month before I see you again.
A month vacation. Man. Well.
Oh, my God.
I know. Have a wonderful time. Give my best to Lisa.
Actually, more than a month. I won't see you. More than a month. Because I get back the 23rd, but I won't be doing a show till that following week. So August 29th, I'll see you.
Thanks, Scott.
Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Oh, my goodness, it's time to talk high tech. Computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We've got smartphones. We got smart watches. We got virtual reality goggles. 8888, ask Leo if you want to talk about that. 88 or any of that. Anything with a chip in it. 8888, ask Leo. Those virtual reality goggles. I think we're a little way off. There's a company called Magic Leap that has, you know, we've seen augmented reality. Well, so let me make the distinction. We've seen virtual reality, first Oculus. It's now a Facebook company, then the Oculus Rift, and now the Oculus Go. And then a company called HTC made something called the Vive. Both of those were pretty much used for gaming. Samsung has this thing called the Gear VR. Have you played with that? That really is gaming a little bit, but it's you have to put your smartphone in it. So it's not the highest end processor. It's more for watch movies or look at, you know, there's a lot of 360 degree movies made now where you're looking at something, but you can look around with these goggles on, even behind you or above you or below you, and see the whole world, the sphere, the 360 degree sphere all the way around you. That's kind of interesting. I have one of those cameras. I'm thinking of bringing that on vacation. I don't know why. And then there's augmented reality. So that's virtual reality where you really don't see anything. You're looking at two screens in front of your eyes, and you don't see the rest of the world, your world at all. Augmented reality, you still see your world, but you see stuff superimposed on your world. Microsoft's HoloLens is an example. And there's another one now out called the Magic Leap 1. HoloLens was how much? $2,500, I think. The Magic Leap 1, and both of these are called developer editions. So they're, you know, they don't expect consumers to buy these at, you know, for thousands of dollars. But they figure developers who want to make applications for it might, or just really hardcore enthusiasts. You look kind of silly wearing these. HoloLens, at least, you know, they don't look so different from a VR helmet, so people would kind of understand what you're doing. The Magic Leaps look more like goggles, like motorcycle goggles. People might just think you have very elaborate motorcycle goggles on. You look like a little bit like an alien, a little bit like an ant. The real problem is this stuff is such early days. It's very primitive. And a lot of experts in this stuff say, well, think about the earliest days of home video games, right? Do you remember getting the Atari VCS and playing, Pong on it or Pitfall. They were really primitive. They had lines and blocks, and that's about it. The sounds were really, really... I mean, if you looked at that and compared it even to the state-of-the-art of gaming at the time, it was primitive. You know, you could go to a Chuck E. Cheese Pizza Time Theater, a video game arcade, and play stuff that was a little more sophisticated than that. And of course, today, we've gone well beyond that. And if you have an Xbox or PlayStation, you could play games that are very high quality, very realistic, 4K, high dynamic range. They're not quite the real world, but they're getting close. So how long did that take? 30 years? I don't think VR will take quite that long, but maybe in 10, 20 years, augmented reality, virtual reality, they'll be something real. Maybe. Maybe. We'll see. We'll see. 8888 Ask Leo. Anyway, that's the kind of thing we talk about, love talking about. Let's go to line 3. Jonathan, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hello, Jonathan.
Hey, Leo. Hey, I have a question for you and a photo app recommendation.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah, but first, I wanted to thank you. You made me the envy of some of my geek friends this past week. We watch MacBreak Weekly or listen to MacBreak Weekly, and a friend of mine texted me and said, Leo just gave you a shout-out on MacBreak Weekly.
Oh,
you were showing a poster I had sent you.
Oh, yeah. I love this poster. This is hysterical. Yeah. I have it right here. Thank you for sending this.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. It's where did you get this? It's kind of a dystopian view of the past.
It's a local company here in Pittsburgh. They're called Alternate Histories. And they do some really great stuff, really fun stuff.
This one looks like one of those 50s, you know, ads, and you might have seen in the back of Life magazine, a perturbed woman in 50s garb, Donna Reed, saying, what do you mean? My computer wants to kill me? And know the warning signs of computer sentience. Does the machine work for man or vice versa? Sinister, emotionless, always watching and waiting? I can't thank you enough. My only conundrum now is where to put this. I love this. This is great.
Oh, I'm so glad. Well, check out their website. They have a lot of good stuff.
I shall.
Alternate Histories.
Histories, yeah.
So I have a question about backup.
Okay.
I was doing some cleaning and found about a dozen external hard drives that I've gotten together over the years. It reminds me of kind of what I used to do with videotapes, where I'd start a videotape and then think, I want to put a fresh one in to take more videos of the kids.
Yeah. Where did you store 20 hard drives?
Boxes. Anywhere.
You must have a basement or an attic. That's all I can think of. Wow.
Well, and so now, and of course, I didn't label them. They're not organized. And I want to know the best way to kind of, I don't want to get rid of these hard drives, of course, because more backups, the better, but to kind of consolidate on all these.
Yeah. They're mostly kind of like the bare bones, like SATA drives, like you would find if you opened a tower PC.
No. These are external hard drives, USB.
So they all have a USB interface.
Yes.
Oh, well, that makes it easier. I was going to recommend a device from a company called NewerTech that would let you connect these up as USB, but they're already USB.
Yes.
Okay. So what you really need, I mean, I guess you could go onesie twosie, plug them into a computer and see what you can find. But what you're thinking what you'd like to do is one by one copy the entire contents over?
Yeah, I was thinking of maybe getting, now that storage is so cheap, maybe getting a, let's say, a 4 terabyte.
Yeah.
Because a lot of these are smaller.
Oh, yeah. They're probably 20 megabytes, some of them. Yeah.
And copy them all onto the big one. And then, you know, that way everything would be together and I could, you know, just organize it that way. But I wanted to see what you thought.
Yeah. There's a program that's specifically for this. There must be more people like you in the world. It's called WinCatalog. And it's at wincatalog.com.
Is that Windows? Because I'm Mac.
Oh, you're Mac. Oh, nuts.
I'm Mac because of you.
Well, I'm a Mac guy, too, so I guess I shouldn't say that. But, the idea is exactly what I think you would want, which is you one by one plug these in. It goes out, it reads them, it makes a giant catalog, and then you can opt to copy them over or not. One of the reasons you'd want to do that first is because You don't want to have duplicates. And I bet you there's a lot of duplicates.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. So you kind of want to catalog first. Let me look and see. I don't off the top of, I mean, I see some things like Disk Catalog Maker. Drag and drop your disk icon on the catalog window, automatically add a burning. Yeah, this is more for CDs. Let's open that one up because that's a really good question. What do people use to catalog multiple hard drives on a Macintosh?
Yeah, because I use Super Duper, and I'm sure maybe six of those are Super Duper backup.
Oh yeah,
I'm sure there's
exactly.
A lot of duplication.
Yeah, you probably you don't want to make copies of all of that. Hold on a second. I want to get your app in just a second. So hang on, okay? But I have to take a break for our fine sponsors. And I also want to give the chat room and the others in the audience a chance to come up with something for cataloging external drives on a Macintosh. Cataloging and optionally copying. I wonder what we would do with that. Part of the problem is going to be the file formats, the drive formats. If you have NTFS drives, for instance, the Macintosh won't be able to read them at all. But there is software you could put on there. I'll talk about that in a second. Back to the calls in just a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo, and we'll get Jonathan's app recommendation right after this. Doing a little jitterbug there. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We've been talking to Jonathan in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He found a couple of dozen hard drives in boxes, and he wants to catalog them on his Mac. And MD in our chat room found something for you, Jonathan, that might really be nice. It's cdfinder.de, but their new version is called NeoFinder. And do you think some of that stuff is media?
Oh, it's everything.
Yeah, because this does a nice thing with media, because photos and videos, it'll show a thumbnail, which would be also very helpful. And so this is a free trial version you can use. And then there's another one on the App Store called Disk Catalog Maker. Or though, if you get it from the website, you can do a trial version, a 30-day trial version of that. I would try one of those, too.
Great. Thank you.
That'll get you started anyway. One nice thing about, I thought was very interesting about NeoFinder, some of those disks might have been made in your Windows days, and they might be file formats that Macintosh can't read. It can read FAT32, and it can read, of course, Apple file formats, but it can't read NTFS. And the nice thing about NeoFinder, it says it will read NTFS disks, which is pretty nice. So that would save you some money. Otherwise, you'd have to go to Paragon, somebody like that, and get a NTFS adapter for the Macintosh. It lets you, it's a little bit of a driver, basically, a little bit of software that would read NTFS.
Excellent. So, and by the way, Leo, about backups, I'm glad you mentioned backing up off-site, because there's that story about Francis Ford Coppola about 15 years ago. He was diligent about backup, but he got robbed of his computers, his backups. He said at the time he lost about 15 years of writing and family photos.
I remember reading that. I was so sad.
Super important.
Yeah.
But so my photo app recommendation, I'm a casual amateur, and I'm pretty good when it comes to editing at simple things like exposure and adjusting color, that sort of thing, but not so much the Photoshop ninja stuff like removing objects. Have you heard of Mender? M-E-N-D-R?
No, tell me about Mender.
No final E, of course. So it's kind of a gig economy thing. It's iOS, and I think it's Android, where you upload a photo, and they have editors all over the world.
That's great.
I think,
I love that idea.
I think all over the world, at least North America. And so within a few minutes, you tell them what you want. I used it to remove I had a picture of some kids on a beach, and they removed the other people who were on the beach. Did a great job. It was only a few dollars. Had a nice interaction with the editor. I think you get one free revision, but I just love these people.
That is really cool. So they're crowdsourcing photo editors.
Yes.
So instead of you having to do it, Mender finds somebody and you pay him a couple of bucks and they'll do it. And truthfully, right. This is a great idea because there are so many people out there, and I watch these guys who go, see, it's all fixed.
Yep.
And I think, I could never have done that. It'd take me all day. So that's a great tip. Mender. It's website is mender.com.
I worked at an ad agency, and I used to ask some of my graphic design friends, but I felt bad doing it. And I've recommended to them to be editors with this platform because when they have a few minutes, they can just grab a photo and do it.
Wow, that's great. iOS and Android, you're right. M-E-N-D-R, and it's free. It's a free app, I think, but of course you have to pay for the retouching.
And they do great.
Well worth it.
I've had do great work, yes.
What a great tip. Thank you so much, Jonathan.
Thank you, Leo.
Have a great day. Take care. I love that. M-E-N-D-R. I'm going to make a note of that one. I'm lazy. Andy in New Jersey, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Andy.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. Welcome.
I have a security question for you. You might think I'm being a little too paranoid. You might not. But first, I wanted to say thank you. And back in 2004, I was dealing with a situation where every parent and adult in my life was telling me to not go to school and get ready for Armageddon. And you responded to an email telling me to go to college and some other things.
Wait a minute. They were saying don't bother because the world's coming to an end?
Yeah, this was a long time ago. We talked about that, but nonetheless.
Wow! So you did go to school? Yeah, you know, education. Do it because you love it, even if the world's coming to the end. And hey, maybe it won't come to an end, and you'll have a skill.
Yeah. Well, you definitely set a 16-year-old kid straight. Now I'm 30 and I'm doing okay.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. It's nice to talk to you.
The world's still here.
And it didn't come. You know what could happen tomorrow? But you have some fun while we're here. That's great, Andy. I'm glad to hear that. Thank you for telling me about that.
So as far as my situation goes, I have a work-at-home job, and they have an iMac that hooks up to my Xfinity gateway router, and it's a connection I pay for, but their policy is that any visible traffic on the network from any device, even, you know, mine, they have the right to audit whenever they want.
Who's they?
And my employer, who shall remain nameless.
Yeah, so that's actually a good thing to keep in mind, that when you're on a work network or using work equipment, the employer has that right. They don't even have to tell you that. They just have the right.
Yeah.
So you're using a...
I figured that.
Do you pay for that? You said, though, that you pay for the Xfinity, or is that not the case?
I pay for everything except for the computer itself. So, and I was thinking and doing some research on it, and
If you use your computer on your network, they have no right to access that.
Yeah, that was my thought, too. However, human resources had other thoughts. So.
Well, you could sue the heck out of them. No. Are you on company time?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess if you're on company time. So part of this comes from not a desire to spy on you. But a very legitimate concern companies have over things like sexual harassment lawsuits. If they're responsible for creating a safe workplace, are you working at home?
Yeah, remote IT for a subcontractor that works for
a
larger company.
That's a little weird.
My concern is more or less, a rogue employee taking advantage of.
Yeah, spying on you. Hang on a second. I got to take a break. This is an interesting one. Maybe if there's a lawyer listening, we can get some help. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Okay, so you work as a remote IT guy for this company.
Mm-hmm.
You use a company computer, but you pay for and use your own network.
Correct.
And then in order to do this, do you log into a company network?
Here's the setup. You know, I got the Xfinity router with, three Ethernet connections. I ran myself one to their machine, which at times is not on the VPN, but most of the time is going to be software hooked up to their Cisco VPN. And I was thinking,
So the auditing that they're doing,
adding a separate router.
The auditing that they're doing is only of the stuff that you do over their VPN.
Yeah.
They could, in theory, have software on that particular PC that also monitors it and sends screenshots back to the home office, that kind of thing. But generally speaking, unless they're particularly aggressive, they're not monitoring other traffic. Like if you took another computer, got on your Xfinity, didn't do the VPN to work, but just used your router to go out to the outside world, they'd have no access to that. Unless they really want to be malicious.
Yeah, you know, like I was thinking we're, you know, some random rogue employee, you know, doing
no, but yeah, but,
the, do,
yeah but he'd have to, in order to do that, he'd have to either put some malware on the router or malware on your other computers. If here's what my suggestion would be, that when you're doing this, disconnect the company computer from the router.
Well, that's the thing. They want it on all the time. You know, which
they want it on all the time.
Yeah, so they can do maintenance whenever they'd like and whatnot. And, you know, even when the VPN's off, they are able to remote desktop in and whatnot. And I'm thinking, well, if they're that far, they could easily look into my network shares.
Yeah, they're on your network. No, they are on your network. Exactly. Yeah.
So would a separate router, like maybe a VPN router, a separate one hooked up to the Xfinity on a whole separate, you know, subnet of IPs be enough or,
yes.
or too much?
So one way, well, let me think what you could do here. If they say that this is must be a persistent connection at all times, that their company provided desktop has to be on, VPN has to be running, connected to the router, and that router is obviously always connected to the internet. That means they're always keeping a channel open. Because their computer is on your network, it could be used to snoop on other network traffic. That's correct. The best way to...
I don't think it's their intent, but, you know.
The problem is that the Xfinity router, would they allow you... See, for instance, one of the things you could do is you could use a separate router to connect to the Xfinity router. You know, like one of these tiny hardware firewalls I'm always talking about. In fact, that might be the best way to do this. So you get a little firewall that you connect another computer to. It connects to the Comcast, but uses a VPN to go pass through the Comcast and out to another router. They would have no access to anything you do at that point. If you didn't use a VPN when you connect to the router, even if you used another router, they'd see that traffic because the traffic's not encrypted when it gets to the Comcast router.
Yeah, well, I was thinking of, you know, like you said, a router VPN built in. That way I don't have to set up all my devices, you know, individually.
Yeah.
My Xbox would even be on the VPN at that point.
Yeah.
I think that might be great.
You could do that. It's going to give you some overhead because of the VPN.
Yeah. I'm okay
with
that.
Do they insist that you use the Xfinity router? Is that part of the deal?
No. You know, I was honestly thinking about getting a separate DSL.
That's what I would do.
CenturyLink phone line, just pay for the extra connection.
Another way to do this would be to get a more sophisticated... I don't like these Xfinity routers anyway. You still need to use the Comcast cable box, you know, the cable modem box, but you don't need to use its router. And get another router, like, say, the Ubiquiti Edge Router X, which lets you do VLANs, and you can do discrete LANs, one to your work desktop and one to something else. Hold on a second. We're going to come back. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number if you've got a question, a comment, a suggestion. We've been talking to Andy, who has an interesting work situation. he's a remote IT guy. His company requires him to use a company laptop at home that's always connected to their virtual private network, and he may not turn it off. So his personal internet is being used by this company laptop to phone home at all times. His concern is that this company laptop, if somebody at work decided to be malicious, has access to his network. And you're right, Jonathan, it does. It's just sitting. And this is, by the way, the same thing we talk about with other Internet of Things devices, like an Amazon Echo or a Ring doorbell. When these devices are put on your home network, they are on your network. And if somebody were to commandeer them, they could use them to get on your network. So you know, you trust your company. Its company's not going to do anything malicious. But it does, in fact, have a device inside the house, inside your network. So your best bet would be to isolate it somehow so that you could then do whatever you want without fear that anybody's spying on you. It's interesting the company's requiring this.
Yeah, and they were fuzzy when asked directly because, you know, I asked HR about what I was signing. And I was like, the wording here is pretty all-encompassing, and they were pretty unsure. But
yeah, they're always going to document. Yeah, any legal document they're going to give you is always going to err on their side. That's, you know, I mean, you don't want to hire a lawyer before you sign it, but that's really the right thing to do because they're not going to do anything to benefit you. Everything's going to be worded in such a way that they go to court, they have all the rights. And in fact, courts have always upheld employers do have a lot of rights. This is an unusual situation because the employer now is inside your house, which you have a right to privacy. You certainly, if they started spying on you, you'd have recourse. Because if you're using your personal, if you're using their computer, no. But if you're using your personal computer and they did something to spy on you, even though you gave them permission to have their computer in your house, that would be illegal. So that's good to know. You are protected in that regard. I'm not a lawyer, but I'm pretty sure in that regard, no matter what you sign, they don't have the right to spy on your private traffic. Only stuff that you do on the work network with the work computer. In other words, the VPN and that computer. However, let's say you really do want to protect yourself. So because they have access to your network through the router, the best thing to do would be to isolate their computer from the rest of your network. And there are a couple of ways to do that. The Xfinity router you have may not have that capability, but many third-party routers do. It's something called VLAN or Virtual Local Area Network, where if you had, it's in effect two networks in your house, one for the company computer and one for everything else, you'd be safe because that company computer couldn't cross the barrier and see what you're doing. That's one, by the way, solution for Internet of Things devices. If you don't want your Amazon Echo to become a gateway to bad guys into your network, you put it on a separate network. And you can do that with a virtual LAN. So you could look for, you have to keep using the Comcast cable modem, but you don't have to use their router. So you could have put their router in bridge mode so that it's not doing any routing. It's just a passive device. You need then there'd be a couple ways to do this. One would be have a dedicated router. Well, no, you really want you want some isolation. There's one solution that comes from Xfinity. they call XFi. They use plumes. These are those little silver things that the Plume router. And Plume has an interesting feature. It has a VLAN feature built into it. They don't call it that, but they have three network levels. They have a guest level, which has access to nothing but the internet. They have the homeowner level, which has access to everything. And they kind of have a middle level, which is internet only. The internet only level, you could put your corporate computer on the internet only level with a Plume, and then everything else that's going on would be isolated. That might be the solution. And you could do that without getting rid of your Xfinity router. You might inquire from Xfinity if you can get one of these Plume, and I don't know, and somebody who uses Plume on Xfinity would have to tell me if they give you access to all the features. This is a feature that's built into the regular Plume. But that's one of many routers that would do this. It's a VLAN is what you need. Another way to do this would be to disable the routing in the Xfinity. Get something, $50 hardware router, it's not Wi-Fi, called the Ubiquiti Edge Router X. It's inexpensive. It has four ports on it. Each of those ports can be on a VLAN, a separate LAN. A little complicated to set up, but you're a smart guy. You could figure this out. And by VLANing you can isolate them. So that's the key word to do some Googling on, is a VLAN. How to set up a VLAN in your house, a virtual network that is not visible to the corporate computer.
And if all else fails, I'll just get another ISP.
Yeah, you know what? If you got a separate ISP, I think you should make a case that, well, okay, fine, but you're going to be paying for this internet access through Xfinity.
Yeah.
Right? that seems
would be beautiful, but yeah, unfortunately not happening.
Yeah, sometimes you need a job more than you need to be right. So that's life, right? And that's kind of what they're insisting on. And I think you're right. I don't think it's nefarious. They're trying to protect themselves. If you started, Bitcoin mining or serving pornography on their computer, they'd want to be able to see that. So they keep an eye on those kinds of things. Any company is going to do that, and legally has the right to do that. The trick is to isolate their computer from the rest of your house. If you get another router that has VLAN capability, that'll do it.
All right, I'll keep doing my research. I really appreciate your help.
Yeah, my pleasure. And thanks for telling me about those days long ago. I'm really pleased that worked out for you.
Yeah, I'm glad the world's still here and glad you are.
We're still here. We're not living in a bunker yet. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks, Andy. Take care. 8888, ask Leo. Yeah, that's a more complicated networking issue, but it's something I think you all want to think about and keep in mind that any device that you put on your network, your home network, has access to all the other devices. You know, the theory being that once you're on your own network, your personal network, it's a secure network. That's why you can get in trouble in a business. If somebody comes from home with their laptop has a virus, plugs it into your company's network, and it can then spread throughout the network. The network's presumed to be safe. Now, actually, more and more companies are adopting protection against that because it's happened. I think it happened to CNN. As I remember, somebody brought in a laptop, might even be a company laptop, but he infected it at home. Inside CNN, you can't get a virus because they have all sorts of antivirus protection right on inbound traffic. But the guy brought it home, got infected, brought it in. Now it's inside all that protection and infected everything else and brought a bunch of their computers to their knees. This was many years ago. Nowadays, we have ways to prevent that. So, and one of the ways is by segmenting, dividing up your network into pieces that can't talk to one another. The really primitive way to do this, my friend Steve Gibson calls the three router solution. I don't know if this is practical, but buying three routers, I don't even want to repeat it. It's so nutty. But you could Google the three router solution and see the kind of the map of how you would do this. One is connected to the outside world. One is connected to a less than safe network, maybe a bunch of, it's actually a good idea if you have a bunch of Internet of Things devices, connect them to a separate router. And then the third router is your router for getting out and into the world. Having a secure and an insecure local area network, I guess that would be the best way to describe it. If you Google three dumb routers, you'll either find a Three Stooges episode or you'll find the three router solution to IoT security. Can't say I. It's certainly not the least expensive way to do this. 8888 ask Leo. That's the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, the website, and I'll put all this stuff up on the website. That saves you writing anything down. Is techguylabs.com. Go to techguylabs.com. We'll even put a link to Steve Gibson's three dumb routers solution. TechGuyLabs.com. 8888-ASK-LEO. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. And Roland is in the Hutchinson, Kansas area with a call. Hello, Roland.
Hey, Leo. Good to talk to you again. It's been a while.
Good to talk to you.
I listened to your MacBook Weekly. And I hear you and Andy talking about, I believe it's VLC, but there's like two components to it, to recording your DVDs and then burning them back off.
Oh, yeah. So if you have DVDs and you want to make hard drive copies of the DVD, the two programs mm-hmm. we talk about, the first one you need is from the French folks. It's called Handbrake, HANDBRAKE.FR. Actually, both mm-hmm. of these are from France. And Handbrake is a transcoder. And actually, it's, I think, a front end to a command line utility called FFmpeg. But basically what it does is it takes video in one format, in this case, in the MPEG-2 format on that DVD, and converts it to a format that you can store on a hard drive more compactly and play back on most devices. In most cases, that'd be an MP4. But it has settings that say, you know, what is it you want to read and what is it you want to record for? Are you recording for an iPhone? Are you recording for a computer? All of that stuff. So, and it takes a little while to churn on it. It's pretty efficient, but it will churn on it and then convert it to that format. You can get one DVD usually into something a little less than a gigabyte in size, which is pretty good. Doesn't include the menus, right. Doesn't include any of that stuff. The problem is most DVDs are copy protected. And Handbrake used to include the software to remove copy protection, but they were worried about getting sued because the motion picture industry is kind of notoriously sensitive about this. I mean, after all, they put the copy protection in the first place. Of course, it was broken by a high school student within a year, but and never repaired. But they don't like you to do that. So the Handbrake guy said, well, here's what you do. In fact, it'll say this when you first use Handbrake. If you want to copy DVDs, you now need another program called the VideoLAN Client, or VLC. You can get that from videoland.org. VLC is a DVD player. So one of the reasons that DVD's copy protection, it's called CSS, was broken so quickly is it's probably really the flaw with all of these schemes. In order for, you can encrypt a DVD, but in order for it to be played back, it has to be decrypted, right? A player can't just play encrypted data. It has to turn it into real data. So the DVD is decrypted using a key that's widely known. All players have that key. So what happens is, in order to play the DVD, VLC opens. It stores the key in memory, and then Handbrake goes, oh, thank you for decrypting that disk, and then is able to rip it. So you need the two together. I haven't done it in a while, but I think you open the disk first with VLC, run Handbrake, then you can close VLC, and Handbrake can go on from there.
Right. Now, my question was, I thought that you could actually record another DVD off of it so, like, the kids wouldn't tear up your DVDs.
Now, that's a different thing. Yeah, so if you can kind of, but if you're going to do that, what I would suggest instead is imaging the DVD, not transcoding it. So remember I said Handbrake takes the format of the DVD and changes it. You really don't want to make a DVD from that because now you're changing it back, and that's a two-step process that's degrading it in each step. So you don't really want that. You want DVD imaging software that will copy the DVD image onto your hard drive and then burn it back. And there's a whole bunch. That's a different process. If you want to make a copy of a DVD. And now this is, of course, even more sensitive. The motion picture industry is really afraid of this. But image burn is the one most people use. IMGBURN.
Now, is that Windows or PC? I'm running a Mac.
Oh, yeah, that's Windows. I wonder if some of the Mac. Image burn is very popular on the Windows folks. What are some of the tools people use on Macintosh for burning it? There was Mac DVD Ripper. It's not ripping, it's imaging. There've been a couple of these, and I just don't remember the names off the top of my head. Maybe ImageBurn works on Macs. I would look at ImageBurn, but there are other. Oh, Disco. That's the one I was thinking of. I don't know if Disco. Oh, yeah, it is still around. DiscoApp.com, DISCO. So what you want is something that will take the DVD, make an image of it. You can play that image back. It's an ISO file that you could play back. Plex will play it and others will play it back. But you could also use it to burn, and it would make an identical copy on a burned disk.
Okay, so I was using the wrong step to do what I thought I was doing. Okay.
Yeah, what you're doing is fine, too. You could give the kids a player, not a DVD player, but a player that would play back that MP4 file you make with Handbrake, put it on a USB key, and play it back. That's probably a better way to do it because you can get many, many more movies in the same space. But if you really want them to... they're much more compact, but because a DVD is about 4.7 gigabytes. A ripped DVD using Handbrake's about a quarter that size.
Okay, yeah. So USB, I can get several movies on it and get a lot easier to move on the airplane rides.
Yeah. Okay, that's what most people do. Are they playing it back on an iPad or something like that?
Well, some of them, sometimes it's an iPad, sometimes it's in the back of the Pacifica.
And the Pacifica has a DVD player. Right. Some DVD players, I bet the Pacifica's DVD player will do this. Some DVD players will play back data DVDs. You can just try burn one disc instead of burning it like a DVD, burn it like an MP4 and see if it'll be played, if the Pacifica drive player will play it. Sometimes they will. It needs the ability to play a data disc.
Okay, well, I know it also has like an SD card that I could put you in.
That's even better. It has an SD card, do it that way. Yeah. That one file, then you can easily put it on an SD card. You can put it on a USB stick. You can put it on the iPad. It'll play everywhere.
Okay.
That's what you use Handbrake for.
That works then. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, yeah. Somebody in the chat room saying DVD Fab is a program that will make copies on a Mac of DVDs. Just, you know, copy it back and forth. They do it working on Windows, too. It's $55. DVDFab.cn. Note the CN. That means it's from China, where they don't care about copyright. And that's part of the problem, is the motion picture industry is not a fan of people making copies of their discs. Technically, I think it is illegal. I think it is. The Digital Millennium Copyright Act says it's illegal to reverse engineer copy protection. That's what these programs do. So they're in defiance of the law. That's why they have to be elsewhere. I don't think anybody's ever gotten in trouble for making personal copies of DVDs. Problem is, you need this software to do it, but I don't think the judge would go after you. If you took them and then sold them online, yes. And so there are, you know, there are people who rent movies, make copies, and sell them. That's wrong. That's just wrong. But if you bought a movie and you own it, and you want to make a copy that the kids can play so it doesn't ruin the DVD, that's a copy for archival purposes. It's always been legal in analog media. There is actually a law that says that's legal in analog media. But digital media, nobody ever made that law. So it is technically illegal. I don't think anybody would ever get in trouble for making an archival copy of something you own for personal purposes. Make sure you own the movie. Buy the movie. Then the movie maker can't get unhappy. You paid for the movie. You bought it. You're just making a copy. You're putting it in a different format to make it easier to play as you drive along the road in your Pacifica. How could anybody get mad at that? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's take a break. We're going to keep taking calls after the show for vacation purposes. So keep calling. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy here. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We talk about smartphones. We talk about smartwatches. Johnny Jett, our travel guy, will not be here this Saturday. He will be here tomorrow. He's traveling. Well, I'll be darned. But so we also talk about using technology to travel better with Johnny. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536. That's the number you can call if you have a question or a comment or a suggestion. You just want to talk about tech like Paul does in Ventura, California. Hello, Paul.
Yeah, hey, Leo. Nice to talk to you. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
Hey, I think I want to buy a 3D printer, and I've been looking into the whole technology. It's not for an industrial use. It's just a hobby. I obviously don't want to spend $200 or $300 and turn around and discover I'm dissatisfied or it doesn't have the capacity or capabilities. I also don't want to spend $1,500 to see the same thing on sale next year for half that. So I'm just wondering.
I can't prevent that. that happens all the time. What do you want to do with a 3D printer? You just want to learn about it, play with it?
I want to learn about it. I want to play with it. The one side I may want to just spend that you can buy entry levels for a couple of $100s, but I suspect that I'm going to quickly probably understand it and want to make sure it has at least the capabilities to do. I don't know. I'm not sure what I would be looking for in features. I know multicolor seems to be a consideration. The type of filament seems to be a consideration. Even how fine it's able to print. I'm probably in the $300 to $800 range, but maybe if I was convinced the features were going to be, you know, useful, I'd probably go a little bit higher. So I'm just kind of, like I said, I know I want to get one. I just am not entirely. It's a very, very confusing technology.
The case could be made that 3D printing was something Silicon Valley decided was going to be the next big thing, and then it wasn't. So it's a hobbyist thing, and it's very early days yet. Most of what you could do with a 3D printer is fun. people often talk about, well, I could print parts, you know, when my my knobs on my oven break, I can print a new knob. Yeah, I guess. Have you played with 3D printers at all? My suggestion would be before you spend even a few hundred dollars on one, that you go to a makerspace or somewhere around you and, you know, try it and look at it. And honestly, talk to somebody who uses them, because there are definitely a lot of gotchas in the 3D printer space. Now, if you just want to learn about printers, 3D printers, there are a couple of good choices. I would say the one that the Wirecutter recommends is probably the best, which is the Tier Time Up Mini. It's right in your price range. It's $529. It uses filament, so it's going to make, you know, plastic stuff. One of the things that's really a challenge with lower price 3D printers is there's a lot of calibration involved. You have to calibrate often in between prints. The more expensive printers are a little bit better. They also can work with different materials. Almost all of these will, less expensive ones will work with PLA, a plastic. The other one that I think the Father Robert, our printer guy, likes, it's a little more expensive for $1,200, is the Lulzbot, L-U-L-Z-B-O-T. That's a slightly higher grade printer. But I think you'd do fine to go with the Wirecutter's pick, $530 at Amazon, the Tier Time Up Mini 2, T-I-E-R-T-I-M-E. They call it the best printer for beginners. And you get pretty quickly an idea of what it could do. I fear that what happens with a lot of these 3D printers is people get all excited about them and they print something and then there may be maybe two things, maybe even three, and then never again. How about in the chat room? How do you feel about 3D printers? Any of you still using them? I would check out the makerspace first, the local library, before you run out and get one. And if you're going to get one as a gift, we occasionally have people call in and say, I want to get a 3D printer for my nephew or something. Get them out there and using one at a makerspace. You know what would be a better gift for a kid who's motivated in that way is a subscription to the local makerspace. That's a place that has all sorts of tools, but more importantly, a lot of adults around who can show you how to use them safely, effectively, and the same goes for a 3D printer. It's good to get some experience under your belt before you run out, and then you'll have a better idea of what you might want to get. If you don't have a makerspace nearby and you just, I got to have one, then this Tier Time's a pretty good choice. You know, it's $600, under $600. If it ends up being a, you know, pink elephant, gray elephant, what do they call it? White elephant. If it's an elephant of any color, you haven't lost that much money. You know, some really good 3D printers are thousands of dollars. And of course, the commercial grade ones are tens of thousands of dollars. I don't know. I think this was a fad, I'll be honest with you. I don't think it has legs. maybe I'm wrong. Correct me if I'm wrong. Give me a ring. 8888 Ask Leah. Line 3 is Jay in Providence, North Carolina. Hello, Jay.
Hey, Leo, I'm having a situation. I'm helping my mother with something on her checking account where her debit card numbers keep getting accessed and charged without her knowledge.
Yikes.
She disputed, I assisted her with the disputing in the case of one account number, and it seemed like they knocked it out of the park. They changed the account number, gave her back the money, and then somebody got access to the new debit card account number, and when we disputed it this time, not only did we not get the money back, she not get the money back, but they're trying to tell us that everything is fine because they changed the debit card account number again. And I realize there's a lot of other people I can complain to, but I'm wondering what an effective route to take is, since they don't seem to want to put me in touch with the IT department.
What's the bank?
It is the North Carolina State Employees Credit Union.
Smaller bank, maybe they have. Do you have any idea how this number keeps getting stolen?
No, I don't.
That's the first thing I'd try to suss out, because there's no point in replacing it again and again and again if it keeps getting stolen. A couple of ways it can get stolen. I mean, these do get stolen, is people using them You know, when you use them, you know, if you go to a dinner and the waitron takes the card and disappears, and they could easily copy it in seconds, right? So, and in general, I would not recommend using a debit card for this kind of stuff. Does she also have a credit card?
She does, and I think she's been doing a lot more with the credit card.
Yeah, the protections are a little better on a credit card than they are on a debit card. For instance, you can't lose more than $50 on a credit card as long as you report it relatively promptly. You can lose more on a debit card. And apparently this credit union, how much did she lose that second time when they wouldn't refund her?
It was $80.
Yeah, I mean, that's wrong. That's wrong. They need to refund that. So I would say the debit card, keep it in your possession. If somebody wants to, you know, use it somewhere where you have it at all times, if somebody wants to take it, use a credit card instead. Your protections are better. And maybe find a bank. If you're going to use a debit card, find a bank that will stand behind its debit card a little better than that credit union. But I would also try to figure out why it's getting stolen. You know, does she use it online?
She only uses email and Facebook as far as internet usage goes.
She's not buying anything with it online.
Right. In fact, the bulk of what she does with it is receive her retirement through it, through direct deposit.
Right. Well, that's fine. That's, you know. It's possible that somewhere she goes, a gas station, an ATM, has what's called a skimmer. These are, unfortunately, very easy to install, difficult to detect, and they have the exact effect of stealing the ATM card information. I presume she has a PIN associated with it. Make sure she keeps that PIN active and, you know, changes it regularly. And then, yeah, be careful. Somewhere she's using it may have a skimmer installed. I've seen these all over the place. Gas stations are very common. It's very easy to install one. I think if it's happened more than once, that's what's likely going on. We'll put a link in the show notes from Clark.com on the dangers of debit cards and how to avoid fraud. Thank you, Foodie, in the chat room for that. We'll put a link in that in the show notes. That's a useful post. Very good tip. Thank you. And I presume that's Clark, what's his name? 12 places to never use a debit card. Pay at the pump, because of skimmers. Any online payment. At the supermarket, again, skimmers. At the car rental counter. When booking advanced travel, when buying furniture and major appliances, or automatic and recurring bill payments. Oh, all right. See, I use a system called privacy.com. Which is, in effect, a virtual debit card. And the number changes. It's merchant locked to a merchant, or I can lock it to one transaction only. I really like that. But it is essentially a debit card because it goes right to your bank account. Privacy.com. And that's, I kind of have been using that for online and stuff like that. Because, for instance, I have a privacy credit card that only works with Amazon. Anybody else uses it, it won't work. It'll be refused. So for subscriptions and things like that, I just make a new, you know, I have a new one for everything. And you can pause the subscription. You can close the card. Gives you a lot of, and it costs nothing. They make their money because it's a credit card. So they get their credit card percentage from the merchant. Chris in Frisco, Texas. Hello, Chris.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm great. Welcome.
Hey. Well, here's my issue. I've got a dilemma, but it's a fun one. I have a Sony credit card, and I gain points on my Sony credit card that I can spend on Sony products.
Mm-hmm.
And I've amassed a bunch over the year or years, and I think I'm in the market for a camera. And so I'm sort of locked into a Sony product, but I've heard you talk about the A7 Mark II.
Oh, I love my A7s. I have all the A's. Sony Alphas are great, yeah. They're getting some competition now. Nikon has finally put out a mirrorless line, the D7, the 7, what are they, X7. So tell me what you're looking for.
Well, that's the thing. You know, I'm not I'm not a professional photographer, or even I'm a hobbyist. I have kids, and I take pictures of them. And so also on their site, they also have like the
digital, the Alphas.
I guess the RX100,
yeah.
Mark II, III. And yeah. I'm wondering if I'm overbuying, or should I just go for the more of the digital snapshots? So I'm not, like I said, I just like taking snapshots.
I love that. These Sony RX100s. They're really great. They are expensive. They are probably the best point-and-shoots out there. They just released the RX100 Model 6, which is $1,200, which is an awful lot to pay for a point-and-shoot. I don't know if I'd recommend that. I mean, the reason there's a market for it is there are a lot of pros who want something light they can just pop in their pocket instead of their big, heavy professional camera. And this is pretty close to that. This is a very nice camera. I'll recommend something a little less expensive, though. What is your budget?
Well, that's the thing. That's the fun part of it. I have Sony points that I've accrued to my.
Oh.
It's not really an object. It's paid for.
Oh. Well, I'll tell you what. If you're getting it for free, that RX100 is a mighty fine camera. You might look and see if they're selling. I'm sure they'll sell the Mark V for less. Now that the 6 is out, if they still sell the Mark IV, any of the RX100s are great. They get better every year, but I have an RX100 Model 2, I think, and it's fantastic. So
okay.
Do you have to buy it from the Sony site to use the points? I guess you probably do.
Yes, I'll redeem through the Sony site. That's
yeah. So look and see what they're offering. In other words, you've got to buy a Sony.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think that...
It's just which one.
Yeah. Well... You know, it's funny because when you're spending that much on a point and shoot, you're getting so close to the price point where you could buy an A7. But then you got to get lenses, and it becomes a much more expensive hobby.
I already have the Alpha 100, the first generation.
Oh, good.
Generation.
Those Alphas are great.
I have my lenses. Yeah.
Yeah. So you could use, then you can get an Alpha A6000, be about half the price Model 100, and it has interchangeable lenses, right? And you already have some lenses. Okay. That's going to be a better choice, absolutely.
Okay.
But if you want to spend $100, Sony also makes $100 point and shoots. And if you want to spend a little more, an A7 R2, which is what I use, it's the older version of the A7 R. That's about $2,000, so it's a little bit more. I think you've got an interesting conundrum. It really depends on how serious you are about photography. You've had an Alpha, and you have some Alpha lenses.
Yes.
That's probably what I would do. Yeah, I would look at what Alphas they have, the A6000.
You think the 6000 is a good camera?
That's a heck of a nice camera. Probably better than the RX100.
That helps.
Yeah, it's a little bigger, but you can change lenses. That makes a huge difference, right?
Yeah. By the way, I took you and Chris Marquardt's advice, and I purchased the 50mm prime or 50 prime lens, and I love taking pictures that way. It's actually
isn't that great? Put that on the A6000. You got a nice little system there. That's 24 megapixels. That's actually the camera. I believe that's the camera I gave my son for his high school graduation. So it's a little dated now. They have a 6500, but the 6500 is more than twice as much. That's what Sony tends to do. They'll keep the previous edition around, and you can save a lot that way.
Do you have time for one more question?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so it's the same dilemma. On the site, you can also buy gift cards. And I've got enough points again that I can purchase a lot of gift cards. And my daughter is into digital art. She's about 12 years old, getting into it and loves it. And I have enough that I could buy gift cards and apply it toward some type of device from Best Buy. And I'm thinking about the newer iPad.
Yeah.
Do you think the iPad's the best for digital art, or is there other ones out there?
And she's going to want to get an iPad Pro because that supports the pencil. And for a digital artist, you don't want to paint with your finger. That's finger painting. You want to draw with a pencil. So beware, in a month, Apple's going to release new iPad Pros.
Right.
So if you could wait a little, or get the gift cards and say, honey, if I were you, this would be a good test of her impulse control. I would wait till next month. But yeah, an iPad Pro, at the very least, the current iPad Pros will cost less because new ones come out. But iPad Pro is, we put Procreate on there, which is an amazing drawing program. I've seen such great art drawn on iPad Pro. In fact, I've seen some of it's done with fingers. So if you can't afford a Pro, you know, you don't want to give her that much money because Pros are a lot more expensive. You can get the 2017 or I guess it's 2018 iPad for $330 and she'll paint with a finger or a little stylus or a cheese, you know, a string cheese stick and still do great stuff. But if you can afford it, the Pro is the way to go.
Right, and the iPad's a better choice than like...
Oh, yeah, there's not even any, there's not even a close second. Okay.
Okay, all right. Okay.
I mean, you're a nice dad. Thanks. Have fun. You got a great artistic family. Leo Laporte, the E-Tech Guy. We're not sure what the iPads will be, or frankly, whether they'll come out next month or October, but my best guess is there'll be two new iPad Pros with Face ID, no physical fingerprint reader. They'll be out next month, and they'll cost what an iPad Pro currently costs, and then they may sell the old 10.5 and 12.9 iPad Pros for less. So either way, waiting a month is a good idea because you can, you know, decide how much you want to spend. Oh, that's right. The 6th Gen can use the Pencil. Of course. I forgot. There's nothing like drawing, and a 10.5-inch is fine. There's nothing like drawing on the iPad. There's nothing even close. Not at that price point. I guess you could get a Surface. Still not as good, if you ask me. So there is some question about when Apple's event will be. We don't know. So anything I say will now be speculation. But if they're true to form, they'll have an event in just a few weeks, next month. And my guess, usually what they do, they like to do them on a Tuesday if they can, because they don't want to do it on a Monday, because then people have to work over the weekend, but they don't want to do it too late in the week. Tuesday is a good day to release a new product. In fact, usually what they do is they announce the product on Tuesday, they make it available for order, pre-order on the Friday following, and then ship it 10 days or a week later. So here's what the best guess based on history would be. Labor Day this year is September 3rd, so they're not going to have it on the 4th. That's the Tuesday. So the following Tuesday, September 11th is probably not an auspicious day to have a big deal event announcement. In fact, in 2012, the Apple event would have been on September 11th. Instead, they moved it to the following day, September 12th. I think that's probably what they'll do. If that's the case, then Apple's iPhone announcements will be September 12th. This is all speculation, but that's the date I'm kind of circling on the calendar. And it does actually tie in. Now, I'm not sure, you know, why, but it ties in. There was a leak from a German phone company that said you'd be able to pre-order the new iPhone the following Friday, September 14th. So that would make sense. Now, maybe they did the same calculation I just did, and they said, well, it's probably on the 12th, so we start selling them on the 14th. And then there was another leak that you'd be able to take delivery on September 21st. Maybe, again, that leak's based on just backwards calculating. But let's assume it's not. Those are three data points. One is intelligent guessing, and two come from industry leaks. Yeah, all right, September 12th. Let's say September 12th. You'll be able to pre-order midnight September 14th, and you'll be able to get a new iPhone on September 21st. It's good. This is good to keep in mind. You wouldn't want to buy an iPhone today, for instance, right? What will it be? Well, this we know a little more about because as we get closer to the ship date, we get leaks out of China where they're being made. You know, the places where they're being made, people smuggle them out. They take pictures. So it's hard to keep a phone secret once they're manufacturing it. The best guess is there'll be three new iPhones. A small LCD-based iPhone that'll be less expensive. One that's the same size as the current iPhone X that'll have an OLED screen, basically the next generation iPhone X, the XS, let's say. And there'll be a big one, a 6.4-inch, that'll look like the iPhone X, but a much bigger screen. That'll be called the X Plus, let's say. So the iPhone, I don't know, plain, the iPhone XS and the iPhone X Plus. Three different models, two OLEDs. all three will have Face ID. That's going to be the wave of the future. No more fingerprint. They'll all come with a new version of iOS, iOS 12, which has some very nice features. I've been using it in a pre-release version for some time, and I like it. It's very nice. Pretty stable, too, I'm happy to say. Much more so than iOS 11 was at this stage. Now, here's the really big question mark. We haven't seen any leaks about new iPads. Well, there's one. In iOS 12, the next version of the iOS software, there are two icons for iPads that don't look anything like the iPads we currently have. There's no home button. There's very little frame bezel around the screen, and it looks like there's a notch for Face ID, and there's two of them. So that's the only data point we have is these icons that appear in iOS 12, but it makes people think, and it does kind of make sense, Apple will release two new iPads, iPad Pros with Face ID, no home screen, no home button and no fingerprint reader, and they'll be bigger screens because there's less frame, there's less bezel around the screen. Don't know what the price would be, don't know anything at all, except this is all guesses based on, you know, logic and these icons. They would probably both be iPad Pros, one 9.7 inches, one 12.9 inches. Except that either they'll be smaller than the current versions with the same size screen, or they'll be the same size as the current versions with a bigger screen. Something's going to give there. Will they announce those at the same time, September 12th, that they announced new iPhones? Well, experts are divided on that one. In the past, Apple has done that, and they've also had separate events in October. Incidentally, there's even another rumor that Apple will, at this event or sometime soon thereafter, announce new Macintoshes. A new what? Mac Mini? There hasn't been a new Mac Mini in years. A new pro-level Mac Mini. And this, by the way, this leak comes from a very good source. Mark Gurman is notorious. He's now at Bloomberg for having excellent sources inside of Apple. And a new 13-inch low-cost MacBook. Will it be a MacBook Air? I don't know. But it'll be like the MacBook Air, but with a better screen and a sub-$1,000 price. That's all we know. Will they announce that in September? Unknown. They could have a mega event in September, September 12th, where they take 2 hours and announce all sorts of new stuff. Or they could spread it out a little bit. You know, one school of thought is Apple doesn't want to distract people from its premier product, the iPhone. So the iPhone will have its own event, and then they'll announce the other stuff later. The other school of thought is, but you've got everybody's attention during an iPhone launch. Why not announce it all at the same time and get the maximum press? The only thing I am sure of is it would be a mistake at this point to buy a new iPhone or iPad. Don't. Wait. You can wait. You can wait 3 weeks. Wait. In 3 weeks, we'll probably know. The other thing I know for sure is no one knows that Apple is pretty good about keeping this stuff quiet. We don't have any leaks from Cupertino, I don't think. And more importantly, they can change things. These things I just told you may be all exactly true today. And in 2 weeks, Apple might say, yeah, no, we're going to do it another day. Or it's not ready, we're going to do it later. Or it's not good enough, we're not going to release it at all. You just don't know. That's one of the beauties of being Apple. They completely control the market. And now that these events are held on the Apple campus, that brand new spaceship campus, the Ring, they have their own special theater, the Steve Jobs Theater. And because it's theirs, they don't have to book it ahead of time. They don't have to telegraph to anybody what's going to be happening. And Apple's famous for not letting the press know until a week or so beforehand. So if it is the 12th, invitations will go out early September, and then you'll know. I can tell you one thing. It'll be the best iPhone ever. We know that for sure. At least they'll tell us that. Are you going to buy a new iPhone? Or, you know, most people, I think, wait, don't they? Every other year, maybe, or every third or fourth year. A requirement of this job, a requirement I don't mind too much, is that I get the new iPhone every year. I have to pay for it. I don't get it free from Apple. Even if I could, I wouldn't want it free from Apple. People who do get review units of these devices return them after a couple of weeks. I don't think that's enough time to review a device. And I don't, you know, I don't want to be beholden to Apple. So I'll just like everybody else, get up at midnight on September 14th, if that's the day, and keep hitting the refresh button on the Apple Store until I can get in. I'll probably get the new iPads, too, at least for review. This is an interesting thing. Nobody feels the need, really, to upgrade an iPad unless they're really old. If you got your iPad in 2010, okay, maybe it's time for a new one. But if you have, as I do, a year or two old iPad, I love my iPad Pro, the 10.5-inch. It's, what, 2 years old now? That is a work of art, a beautiful thing. And there is absolutely no reason to buy a new one. I don't need a new one. And that's one of the reasons iPad sales tend not to be huge. I think they saturate the market. And then, in 4 years, you might get a new one. 8888 Ask Leo, do you agree with my careful calculations? If you work for Apple and you'd like to tell me something, we'll keep your identity secret. We can even use a voice changer on you. Give me a ring. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Ain't no stopping us now.
Good, I'm glad to hear.
Where does he find all these records? Is there I bet you.
Records?
I bet you he's playing records. I bet you in the back, somewhere out in the storage shed, somebody has stuck all the old disco records. What are you going to do? You're not going to throw them away. Maybe disco will come back.
Yeah, well, don't you think someone digitized them and put them on a cart or something?
Are they digitized? Maybe they are. Be very fancy. Yeah, put them on a cart. They're all on carts. So Dick joins us every week to talk about some fun piece of consumer electronics he's found, sometimes on his doorstep, sometimes at a conference. What do you have for us this week?
Yeah, all right. So, every year I try and find an unusual backpack for going back to school. I do a spot for ABC. So I actually found this in February at Toy Fair. And I said to the woman, I think it was Josie Makata, she had backpacks that looked like giant football helmets.
I need this. My son is a big Green Bay Packer fan.
Oh, my gosh. I said, Jesse, in August, can you send me one? Because yeah. I think this is really different. And so she started out with one, Ohio State, and it took her 6 years from the time she came up with the idea. She was getting her son's backpack, and she thought, this is like a bag. She said, I'm going to come up with something really unique for kids. And so she stumbled with the idea of making backpacks that look like giant football helmets. They're 18, I think it's 18 and a half inches high. And she started out with Ohio State. And over the 6 years, she signed up.
6 years. Well, you got to license it, right?
Yes. 30 schools, and they're still working with more schools.
Oh, but also, no NFL. This is all NCAA.
No, but they're trying for – and then, of course, you had to design it, and then you have to have it built. I mean, it's – from the back, you hit it, and it's a hard surface.
It's hard helmet surface?
Yes. Wow. It's a hard helmet surface.
Wow.
And then you open it up, and there's two compartments. One, there's a slip-in compartment for a tablet or a laptop. And then the back compartment is really big because it's the inside of that half football helmet. And they're very reasonable. They're $49.99.
Oh, she's going to sell these like crazy, but she has to NFL involved.
Yes. Also, Leo, if you want to just make your own, they sell different color combination helmets that are blank decorations. Oh, Leo, the Twit team.
I need Twit helmets.
A Twit helmet.
And the upside of this is somebody whacks you in the behind, they're going to hurt themselves.
Exactly.
It's a helmet.
Exactly. I thought it was very clever, and it has mesh pockets on the side for the water bottles.
Oh, I like this. And,
it's very clever.
So,
it's very clever.
StarSportsBackpack.com.
.com, exactly. Yeah. I think they might have something on Amazon, but I'm not sure. But the company itself where you can see them all is what you said.
And, what's her story? Is this is her first business? Is it?
You know what? I believe it is. It was just something that she thought, you know what, my son, I'm going to do something that he will really stand out at school. And when other kids saw it, they, I want that. And then she thought, well, you know what? I'm going to branch out.
They have some hockey, LA Kings, Montreal Canadiens. So they've got NHL helmets as well. This is really cool.
I think it's a very clever idea. I think she's onto something.
Yeah. Maybe, yeah. Well, I wish her luck. I think that's great. And if you have an NCAA or a hockey team that you like, she's, you know, go
and
it,
there's
check
generic,
it out.
There's a generic, on there you can see the generic, where, what it looks like with no logo at all.
Right.
So you design your own. Pick a color.
Pick a
What's the official Twit color, Leo?
Like every website in the world, baby blue.
Baby blue. Okay.
Well, not exactly baby blue. Twit blue, I would call it.
Twit blue. I like that better.
It's baby blue. I could give you the Pantone numbers if you really cared. Dick DiBartolo, you'll find him at gizwiz.biz. In fact, that's where you'll find the link to this helmet, gizwiz.biz. Click the GizWiz Visits the Tech Guy button to find. Actually, you've got it on the front page, but you could click the GizWiz Visits the Tech Guy button, and you find all the stuff that he mentions on our show. He also is on World News Now and ABC on a regular basis, mentioned it there. You know, you'll find it all over the place. While you're there, play the What the Heck Is It contest. We're running up against the clock.
Yeah,
here.
Just like six more days.
Ends in August, August 31st. It's pretty obvious.
What is it, Leo?
Well, it's that light that the police put on the top of the car. You know, those undercover cops when they in the movie and they're driving around, they're eating their hoagies, and all of a sudden they see a crime committed. They whip it out from the glove compartment, slap it on the top of the car. It's that.
That's not bad. That's
not what
bad.
It is.
Oh, I'm not saying. I'm just saying that's not bad.
I know it's not, because that's so obvious. It's definitely not. And one thing he doesn't give you is any size of a sense of scale. So we don't.
Why? Yeah, no.
No.
I would never do that.
So for all we know, that thing is a quarter inch tall. It could be teensy weensy.
Or 5 feet high.
Or it could be the size of the security robot patrolling our parking lot.
Could be either. I saw that guy. Yeah.
Yeah. That thing was 5'6". It was huge. All right, Dick. Well, I'm going to play this game because we got to get – well, I can't play, but others can play and win a chance to get
– Oh, you can play. Employers can play.
Employers, not employees.
Not employees. No
employers of Dick DiBartolo and his family is encouraged. No, I have a good set of autographed Mad magazines, thanks to you. I really appreciate it. So I won't compete against everybody else. But you go over there and you get a chance to win an autographed Mad, autographed by this guy. In fact, this is the Mad magazine with the whack-a-moles. Or whack a holes on it. I love it. Thank you, Dickie D.
Okay, buddy. Hey, have a super trip, buddy.
Thank you. Yeah. Wait. The good news is, so I'm going to be leaving because I don't want to. I don't like being around when the Apple events happen. I don't want to.
I think they'll delay it until you come back.
No, they wait until I'm gone. Say, is he out of the country? Okay, now we can tell people. But what we're going to do is, in fact, if you're on the phone, hang on, because we will continue to record some calls after the show ends in a couple of minutes. So I like to make new shows. So the first couple of weeks, there'll be brand new shows, brand new calls you haven't heard before. Then Rich DeMuro will be here. And I know you love Rich. In fact, everybody likes Rich a little
much. I love Rich a little bit less than you.
Oh, thank you. Rich from, he's on KTLA. He's a good-looking television tech guy. I hate his guts. No, I don't. I love Rich. He's going to be filling in for me the week after the Apple announcement. If we've calculated correctly, this is why this is actually a big deal, getting this Apple announcement timing right, because I am gone through September 9th. He'll be here September 15th, 16th, 22nd, and 23rd. And with any luck, he'll be able to talk about the new Apple stuff. If not, I'll talk about it when I get back.
Perfect.
And we have pre-recorded Dick DiBartolo's you haven't heard, all sorts of great stuff. Don't worry, all new content coming up. Thank you, Dickie D.
Okay, buddy, take care.
See you next month. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Thank you to Michael Cozio, musical director. Thank you to Kim Schaffer for answering the phones. If you're on the line, hang on the line. I'm going to keep answering calls. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.